Those of you who were here a week ago know that the topic of my sermon then was the same as what I'm speaking on today, our first principle. Last week, I focused on the positive side of that principle, which asserts the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But as is often the case in life, there can be a negative side to things. Even something that is intended to be affirming and positive. And as Reverend Dr. Fred Muir points out in our reading this morning, our first principle can be interpreted or misconstrued in a way that turns the value it lifts up in a direction that can become negative. It is likely that not everyone here today was present for the service a week ago, so I want to begin on a positive note by briefly recalling what I shared last Sunday. For those of you who were here for that service, this is review. If I missed something that was important to you, I hope you will share whatever that was with someone who is hearing this for the first time. Last week, I talked about the origins of our first principle and the reason it holds the number one slot in our list of seven principles. Its roots go all the way back to the third chapter of the book of Genesis in the Hebrew Bible. It is from that story of Adam and Eve eating of the forbidden fruit that the concept of original human sin is derived. Our first principle counters the concept that we are first and foremost sinful by asserting that which is positive about every person, namely, that each person has inherent worth and dignity. I stepped out on a limb by suggesting that the message in our first principle is a saving message for those who have been taught or have come to believe that they are inadequate, defective, or born into sin. And I indicated that our first principle is not easy to live out. It asks us to open our hearts to a degree that we may find very difficult to do at times with some people. This is not an easy principle for any of us to fully live out. One reason in particular, though, makes it especially difficult. It is a reason that, without even realizing it, leads us sometimes to misconstrue what our first principle says and means. This is actually illustrated clearly in our reading. Let's hear again the words of Reverend Muir. He states, "The inherent worth and dignity of the individual is not just our first principle as you use. Often, it is our defining principle." I would ask you to take a moment to turn to the back of your order of service. You'll see there the principles. Read the first one. Notice how our first principle is written there. Now, hear again what Muir wrote. The inherent worth and dignity of the individual is not just our first principle as you use, it is our defining principle. Notice that the words every person have been changed to the individual. In my experience, we you use are typically very particular about our words. Generally, we want to say what we mean and mean what we say. Clearly, there is a mismatch between what Muir has written and the words of our first principle. You might think this is a small and insignificant point. Some of you might think that I'm being critical of Reverend Muir and his selection of words. On the contrary, I was present on June 20th, 2012, when he delivered the Berry Street essay that our reading this morning comes from. I point out his use of words because he was making a very deliberate and important point with his word choice. You can find more of what is contained in his essay in the winter 2012 edition of UU World Magazine. If you read that article or his full Berry Street essay, I believe you will clearly recognize that what I am saying is true. He was making a point. And in regards to being nitpicky, I had to address the issue of what our first principal was actually stating with a congregation I served previously. That congregation had an advertisement on a local PBS radio station that used the same wording that Reverend Muir did. The ad, however, was not intended to stimulate deeper thinking about our first principal. Instead of stating that Unitarian Universalism affirms and promotes the inherent worth and dignity of every person, it stated that UUs recognize the inherent worth and dignity of the individual. It seems to me that when the words every person get replaced with the individual, the essence of our first principle changes, possibly only slightly and subtly, but it changes nonetheless. And the change, in my estimation, is not in a positive direction. When the individual replaces every person, we start down a path that can be limiting and even harmful. It is a path that shifts our focus from all people to one person. It moves away from the inclusiveness that every person implies and focuses our attention instead on one person, the individual. This seemingly minor change in words has the tendency to alter how we perceive and think about what our first principle is actually affirming. This word change can have us misconstrue what our first principle seeks to promote by diverting our attention from all people to the individual. This small shift could even be interpreted as an endorsement or an encouragement of individualism, along with some of its worst elements, namely exclusiveness, entitlement, and self-absorption. It seems to me that all three of these negative elements of individualism are showing up in our country to a degree that is far beyond what is beneficial or healthy for any of us. Entitlement, exclusiveness, and self-absorption are present and prevalent in at least three other destructive isms that are all too common in our country today. These are racism, sexism, and nationalism. You may think of some others. I must say that I don't know of any scientific research that correlates individualism with any of these three. That said, the similarities I see between the ramifications of individualism and the other three isms I just mentioned makes me wonder, what connections are there? Are there connections that tie them to one another? That might just be a sermon for future, or that might just be a topic for a future sermon, but that's going to have to wait. Now, I want to return to what we heard in our reading. Muir warns us about the potential harm that can result when we misconstrue the intent of our purpose in the first principle. He also points out a strand of our faith tradition which offers us more hope and promise than the individualism he cites ever could. Let's hear his words again. We frequently overlook another strand of our tradition in our associations, principles, and purposes. Another story about ourselves that can deepen and grow our future. It is not the language of individualism, not of I Church, but of covenant. As free congregations, we promise to one another our mutual trust and support. He then goes on. We cannot do both covenant and individualism. Individuality, yes, but not individualism. Articulating and living our principles as a commitment to covenant, creating and sustaining community by promising to one another our mutual trust and support, this takes extra effort. This takes extra effort. How right he is. I would say that this assertion is both very true and a significant understatement at the same time. Keeping the worst elements of individualism in check while maintaining and supporting individuality and building a sustainable community is an incredibly difficult task. And for Unitarian Universalists, it may be even more difficult than for those in some other religious traditions. We don't have someone on high who will tell us specifically how we need to act. Guilt, shame, and fear aren't typically used in our congregations to get people to act in healthier or more appropriate ways. And we don't have one authoritative text that informs us how both individuality and healthy, sustainable community can be nurtured and sustained. It seems to me that Muir is correct when he suggests that covenant is the strand of our faith tradition that holds the most promise for us in dealing with this difficult task. Many of you have likely heard me share my views about covenant. I've talked about it in numerous committee meetings, as well as in sermons that I've delivered here previously. Today, I would like to speak directly to the important and positive place covenant holds in my life, as a point from which both to begin and diverge. I want to share the quotes by Ralph Waldo Emerson that were in our reading today. Remember that Muir believes Emerson had an important role in the level of individualism that can be found in Unitarian Universalism today. Emerson wrote, "Trust thy heart, trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string." He also wrote, "No law can be sacred to me but that of my nature." Like Muir, at certain times in my life, I've found the sentiments Emerson put forth to be very inspiring and attractive. As I look back, however, I'm certain that my nature was not always my highest nature. I think probably some of you may be able to relate to what I'm saying here. I would say there were times when the nature I was following originated in that part of my brain I inherited from my far, far distant ancestors, my reptilian ancestors. And there have been times when I chose to trust my nature while ignoring what those who loved and cared about me were attempting to share with me. Today, I realize that when I veer off the road of individuality and go down the narrow path of individualism, I have a tendency to pay far too little attention to my highest nature. When I set my course toward the path of individualism, the likelihood that I will be able to honor the worth and dignity of others is reduced. And not by a little bit, but by a lot. I've discovered that there is a way for me to be able to both maintain my individuality and to respect and honor the community I am an integral part of. I have discovered that when I attend to and honor the covenants I have with those I am in deep relationship with, my individuality is affirmed and healthy. When I attend to and honor the covenants I have with those I am in deep relationship with, my presence is a support and an asset to the community I am a part of. From this place of awareness, I recognize that the challenge of fully living out our first principle requires that I rise above many aspects of my nature. This principle calls me to honor and respect those I encounter as I would want those others to honor and to respect me. I feel quite humble when I consider how challenging it is to live up to what our first principle states. And when I think about the covenants I am called to honor, my humility increases. How then am I, and are we, going to face this challenge of keeping the tendency towards individualism in check? And how shall I and we go about building the beloved community that Muir speaks of, the beloved community where individuality and community are vibrant and healthy? And how can we hope to fully affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person? To paraphrase a musical group from my youth, a group you might be familiar with, I'm going to try with a little help from my friends. We'll get by with a little help from our friends. We can do it, friends. We can do it by being clear about and by honoring the covenants which are the bonds between us. May it be so.